Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. 4.5 years ago, I watched a documentary called Breaking Boundaries. You may have heard of this as well. It was released, hosted by Sir David Attenborough in conjunction with a researcher named Johan Rockström. He is with the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research in Sweden. The documentary was called Breaking Boundaries, The Science of Our Planet. And basically, it tries to pull together the 9 boundaries they consider unbreachable in order to maintain the health of the planet. That is to say, if we did breach them, we are putting the health of the planet in jeopardy. And at the time of the documentary, they said that we had crossed 4 of those 9 boundaries. The documentary had a very specific call to action, essentially saying that we have to reverse the effects because we're getting close on these different boundaries. But there is still time. I remember both being inspired by the documentary in its bluntness of the gravity of the situation and the potential consequences of crossing the boundaries, and slightly disappointed that it still seemed to give off this vibe of all of this is reversible. We can fix this. You know, we've only crossed 4 of the 9 boundaries. If we pull together and try really hard, then everything will be all right. And I just remember thinking, yeah, okay, they're saying we've crossed 4 of these 9 boundaries, but first of all, it's a spectrum. It's not like there is a purely defined boundary that on one side you're okay and on the other side you're not. And by saying that 4 of the 9 boundaries have been crossed, that sure makes it feel like, oh, well, less than half of them have been crossed. And it felt a little bit optimistic and like we were still in the very early days of the danger. Well, in just the last 4.5 years since that documentary aired, they have adjusted things from 4 of the boundaries being crossed to now they say that 7 of the 9 boundaries have been crossed. And they just announced the 7th of the 9, which was ocean acidification. That was in a paper research paper that was just released. So they're now saying essentially there's only 2 of these left. And again, it's not like once we hit all 9, suddenly the planet has ended. And it's not like we have to hit all 9 for there to be extremely grave consequences. So I'm going to read what these 9 are, and then we'll kind of go through just quickly some of each of them, why they've been crossed, which ones haven't been crossed, those types of things. So the 9 are climate change, biosphere integrity, land system change, freshwater change, biogeochemical flows, ocean acidification, atmospheric aerosol loading, and stratospheric ozone depletion. The 4 that had been crossed at the time of when the documentary came out first was climate change, biosphere integrity, land system change, and freshwater change. So the ones that had not yet been crossed were the biogeochemical flows, the ocean acidification, the atmospheric aerosol loading, the stratospheric ozone depletion, and the novel entities. And I guess we'll just jump right into kind of going through each of these here. So novel entities are things like synthetic chemicals, plastics, the type of stuff that we create and introduce into the environment. They're things that the environment are not used to having experienced, at least in the form that we have created them. So part of the reason why it had not been crossed in the documentary, where they said it hadn't been crossed, was simply because it's kind of hard to define and control the variables in the research regarding these synthetic chemicals. We have not done a great job of doing the research necessary to really define this. And that has begun to change. We're doing much more in the research into like microplastics, into synthetic chemicals. A 2022 paper, which was by Person et al., and other works. There was one called Safe and Just Earth System Boundaries in 2023. Essentially, those showed that the rate of production and release of these novel entities exceeded our capacity to monitor, to assess risks, to control them, to reduce them. Basically, it was outside of our control by that point, and that we'd passed a safe operating space, at least according to the Potsdam Institute's metrics. So, you know, just between 2000 and 2015, plastic production has increased almost 80%. Between 2000 and today, it's probably much more like doubling the production of plastics. We've talked about all sorts of different types of forever chemicals and other things beyond just plastics and the effects they have on the environment. So they did, yeah, since 2021 have said we've crossed that boundary. Biogeochemical flows are nitrogen and phosphorus. Again, it's more about, it's not that like suddenly we crossed this line, this boundary, but rather that doing research over the last 5 or so years, looking backwards, they realized that we didn't have proper reporting and an analysis previously. So there was an update in 2023 to this framework where they basically said, and they assigned control variables to the nitrogen and phosphorus controls, like or nutrient cycles, to evaluate whether the current flows exceeded the safe limits, and they found that they do. Part of the reason for this is that studies have shown that what's called legacy phosphorus, so from fertilizer use in the past, is continually being mobilized even under low flow conditions in river channels. So essentially, the fertilizer that has been used in the past sits sort of dormant in our riverbeds, in our lake beds, and it's flowing into our aquatic ecosystems. They didn't realize what large impact previous phosphorus was still making. I think it was kind of the assumption that fertilizer use from the past had already washed into the waterways, but much of it is still making its way. So there's this kind of overload of the current stuff that we're washing into our waterways, plus the stuff that has already been utilized. And obviously the consequences of that, they're saying that because nitrogen fixation and phosphorus runoff have grown so much, the cycles, the natural cycles, are overloaded. Essentially, that means that lakes, rivers, coastal zones, it creates algal blooms, hypoxia. We've talked about what this does in the oceans, the acidification, and that leads to ocean acidification, which we'll talk about here in just a second. And on top of that, excessive nutrients can also feed greenhouse gas emissions. So yeah, jumping into ocean acidification, that was the third that has been breached in just the last few years. There was a study just released here in 2025 called Ocean Acidification, Another Planetary Boundary Crossed. There were several researchers in this one: Finley, Feely, Jiang, Pelletier, Bednarsek. I probably got that way wrong. Anyway, a revised estimates of the pre-industrial aragonite saturation state, which used updated global ocean chemistry data and assessed ecological indicators. Essentially, they found that by 2020, large parts of the ocean, both surface and subsurface, had already crossed into the uncertainty range of the acidification boundary. Specifically, over 40% of the global surface ocean and up to 60% of the subsurface ocean down to 200 meters had crossed that boundary by 2020. And so it's so interesting that, again, this research is going backwards in time and saying that, oh, we released that documentary in 2021, but by 2020, it turns out we had actually already passed the boundary that we had created. Kellen and I did a whole episode on ocean acidification, so I recommend going and listening to that one if you haven't. But essentially, this causes huge consequences for life in the oceans, calcifying organisms, so coral reefs, pteropods, shellfish. They can't produce the shells essentially that they need in order to maintain healthy life. And this is, you know, when we're talking about ocean ecosystems, these are parts of the ecosystems that are massively important to food chains and have an upward effect on all ocean life. So essentially, just to kind of go over again the process there, as more carbon dioxide dissolves in seawater, it creates this formation of carbonic acid. That's ocean acidification. That's a lower pH. It reduces the aragonite and calcite saturation. I'm probably saying aragonite wrong. My apologies if that's the case. Anyway, those saturation levels, again, are crucial for exoskeletal shell type builders in the marine ecosystems. Once it hits below a certain threshold, those organisms cannot continue to build the calcium carbonate structures effectively. So their shells become fragile, they fail altogether. It really affects corals and coral reefs, which are huge ecosystems in our oceans, but it does also have a knock-on effect on the entire marine food web. So that's fish, mammals, other ocean life that we depend on as humans, but obviously just in and of itself is a huge problem for animal life on Earth. Lastly, highly acidified water in the ocean can reduce its capacity to take up more CO2. So it can slowly convert from being a carbon sink to being a carbon source. And that is a feedback loop in climate change. So the other ones that have already been passed, and which I think we don't need to go in depth in, we are fully aware of those ones: climate change, biodiversity loss, land system change, basically how much of our, you know, what is Earth's land doing and how is it being used? They had put the safe limit for that one at 75% of our forests intact, and all of the massive deforestation, forest fires, and all of that have destroyed that, and freshwater use. So the only two that have not yet been passed are stratospheric ozone depletion and atmospheric aerosol loading. So ozone depletion, you know, harkening back to the 90s with the, you know, the ozone layer and the hole in the ozone, and this thing that climate deniers love to use as a way of saying, oh, you guys freaked out about the ozone way back then and Al Gore and blah, 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 and that turned out to be nothing. Well, the truth is it was an example of people working very hard, governments coming together to ban the substances that were causing this to happen, the chemicals that were, you know, creating this hole in the ozone and fixing it. Now, that issue was minuscule in comparison to the challenges that we face today. And so, the ozone depletion, it's recovering due to the Montreal Protocol, which was put in place at that time, but it is still vulnerable. And a new paper just came out, which describes that there's actually a feedback loop of warming that comes from ozone, and recovering ozone is worsening that. There's actually a projection that by 2050, ozone will be the second leading cause of warming of the planet, which is fascinating and interesting. It is still probably a net positive for us to have fixed that issue. The hole in the ozone did, you know, qualify as a grave danger to life on Earth. But there are negative effects as well when it comes to warming in regards to the healing of the ozone. The same thing is true about aerosol loading. It's funny that these two that have not been breached are ones that have negative consequences as well, at least in the short term. Aerosol loading, you know, shipping, we've talked about this several times, but as aerosols are released into the air, it's a short-term buffer against warming, and because it reflects some of the heat back out into the atmosphere, some of the light back out into the atmosphere. And as we reduce the amount of aerosols that we're putting out into the atmosphere, it temporarily increases warming, and there is quite a bit of warming loaded into that. Will those two be passed? You know, will we cross those boundaries? And will it matter in the long run of things when you consider the other boundaries that have already been crossed? Anyway, listen, the documentary was good. I do recommend watching it. I think they do, again, a really good job at explaining the issues that we face. David Attenborough is a gem. He is 99 years old at the time of recording this. He's done a great job at reporting on this type of stuff in a very relatable way. And you can feel the weight of it on him in this documentary. Okay, thank you for being here. I haven't plugged Patreon in a while. If you are enjoying the episodes, hopefully you'll join us for weekly interviews that we're doing right now with patrons. We're trying to build a bit of a community there, help people get to know each other a little bit more, find out how regular people are coping with and understanding collapse. We've had a couple of those episodes as we've just recently started doing that, and it has been really encouraging, enlightening, and even inspiring. So feel free to join us on Patreon. It's just a $5 a month. You know, helps me out, supports the podcast. But to everyone listening, I say thank you. Thank you for being here. And we'll talk again tomorrow. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.